זה שיעור on ליקוטי שיחס חלק יוד טס, פרשס טובוי, second שיחה. Already spoken several, many times, says the Rebbe, that even though Rashi comes to explain, first and foremost, the simple meaning of the Pasuk, however, in his Pirush, there is also Yeino Shel Torah, there's the wine of Torah, deeper aspects, and the secrets of the Torah. As is well known, the Vort of the Alter Rebbe. And the Rebbe says that this week is the Daf Torah has Kumi Oiri, Kiva Oireich. So those are the words of the Prophet that says, Arise, my light. And this refers to Chai Elul, which is the day that the light of the Alter Rebbe began to shine. This is the Alter Rebbe's birthday. And it's well known the word of the Baal Shem regarding this, regarding the birthday on this day. This day is Chai Elul. The Rebbe is well known, because it's open. She will say, I see where the Rebbe is from. Let me just say what the Rebbe is well known. That the after davening on Wednesday, Chai Elul, the year that the Alter Rebbe was born, the Alter Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov himself, was Yom Tov Dik, and on he made a Suda on that day. He was in an exceptional Simcha, and he says that our teacher, the Baal Shem Tov, said that on Wednesday, that's the day when the luminaries were hung in the world on day Wednesday. That's when it says Yehima Eidus. There should be luminaries during Hashem's creation. And in this case, it's the fourth day of the Haftarah of Kumi Eiri. Let my light arise. So he says there came down a new soul into the world that's going to illuminate the world in the Torah of Nigla, the revealed aspects of Torah, and the Torah of Chassidus. And will have Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, for the path of Chassidus, and will be successful till Mashiach comes. So the Rebbe says, well known, the Vort of the Alter Rebbe, the Vort of the Baal Shem, so it's well known what the Alter Rebbe said, and then the Rebbe said parenthetically, this Chai Elul, this is the week of Kumi Eiri of the Haftarah, where the Baal Shem Tov related it to the birth of the Baal Alter Rebbe. What did the Alter Rebbe say? Vavus the word from Alter Rebbe, Ayem Yem, that about the Yeina Shel Torah, about the depth, right? That the depth that's contained within the Pirush Rashi. And so also says the Rebbe is about the commentary of Rashi, also on the words of Techacham, the words of rebuke. The Rebbe says even more so we could say, when it comes to the Pirush Rashi on the rebuke, so then we have an additional dimension. Because the Alter Rebbe suddenly looked at the Torah about the actual words of Teichacha, of rebuke themselves, which are harsh words. Says the Alter Rebbe looked at the Torah, even though in a revealed way, their content is the opposite of blessing. They're called the klolos, the curses. We don't even want to say it's curses. Opposite of blessing. However, says the Alter Rebbe, according to the truth, Einam Rak Brachas, they are only blessings. Why? Because Torah has within it hidden and revealed. And in the hidden and the pnimius and the neshama of these curses is the concept of the highest brachas possible. Similar to what the Gemara says when Rashbi sent his son, Rabbi Shimon Yochai sent his son to get brachas from the great sages, and he came back and he asked him, what did they say? He said, They gave me things that sounded like the opposite of brachas. And Rabbi Shimon Yochai unpacked and reframed those things that were said, and he said, it's all brachas. You just have to know how to read them, how to understand them. The Rebbe says here in a footnote, I'm going to quote this because it becomes relevant. The Rebbe refers back to it later, to the very end of the Sicha. The Rebbe says that in Oir HaTorah of the Tzemach Tzedek, in this parasha, he explains at great length that the rebuke, that the words of opposite of bracha in our parasha, it's all going on the negativity within the world. In other words, noiga, there's, when we have the world, there's kedusha, that's all good. There's klipa, that's all bad. And then you have what's called klipas noiga, the klipa, the negativity that also has noiga, also has light. But there's negativity. So these klolos are going al oivecha, they're going on the negativity within the generally positive klipas noiga, intermediary level, which has good and bad, so these klolas are going on the bad. It's almost like saying, perhaps, like, he should be knocked out, he should be exterminated. You know, who are you talking about? Well, I'm talking about the bad guys. Oh, okay. So here we're talking about the bad that's incorporated within the general playing field, and it's about them that comes the klolas. So it's not really an intention to be negativity upon anything good. Says the Rebbe, similarly, when we talk about Pirush Rashi on the Teichacha, so the Pshat of Rashi, right, the Pshat of those Psukim is negativity, klolos, the opposite of Bracha. So Pshat of Rashi is going to be coming to explain how terrible what these opposite of Brachas are, because that's the simple reading of the Pashut. But then we're also going to be able to see within the deeper reading, the Yenishotir, the wine, the depth of Rashi, those same words of Rashi will come to tell us the depth of the high brachas that come in these words. So the Rebbe is going to learn in the same words that on the surface they're accentuating the negativity. In the deeper meaning, they're highlighting and deepening the positivity of the words. It's the same concept, but it's going to... You get it? Amazing. So put on your seatbelts and listen to what the Rebbe says here. The Rebbe is going here on the pasuk, on the end of the last pasuk of the Teichacha. After this is the last pasuk, the Balkaria says softly, and then afterwards he raises his voice and says, these are the words of the covenant, Eile Divrei HaBris, that Hashem spoke, that Moshe spoke with the Bnei Yisrael. So the last pasuk of the Teichacha, the pasuk says, Hashem will bring you back to Egypt in Ba'aniyos, which Rashi will say means ships. In the path that I have told you, you won't go back to see it, because Hashem said, you're not going to go back to Egypt. When they left Egypt, he says, don't go back. I've taken you out of there. You're never going to go back there. And you will be sold there by your enemies to servants and to maidservants, and nobody will want to buy. That's the literal reading of the pasuk. So, Pashas, we understand, since it's the end of the Teichacha, it's coming to really give a grand finale of negativity. So we have to understand, how is that so bad? What's the big, terrible catastrophe that the Jews will be taken back to Egypt? Well, okay. And nobody's going to want to buy them. In a way, sounds good. The Rebbe quotes in the Ha'orah from the Bechaya says that's actually a good midah that nobody wants to buy. That means they, you know, we think it's better to slave away in somebody's house than to be on the market, nobody wants to buy. So the Baha'i says, actually, that's a middle table. So the Rebbe says, but Papashtos, this is negativity. How is that negativity? So Rashi explains on this. Rashi explains on this pasuk, but Anies, what does it mean? Anies means Sfinois, in ships, Beshevi, Beshivya, in captivity. In other words, they're going to come as captives to Egypt. And about Ein Koina, there's no one to buy them. Says Rashi, because they will have decreed upon you hereg v'kiloyin, death and kiloyin, being finished off, extermination, God forbid. When we learn this at first glance, says the Rebbe, comes out in this pasuk, there's two main disasters. First of all, the Jews are going to come back in captivity to Egypt. The emphasis being on the captivity. B, that they're going to be decree upon you death and extermination. And the other words in the pasuk, going back in ships, in a way that I told you, you're never going to go back. You will have to sell yourself. You'll try and sell yourself there to your enemies as servants and maidservants. It seems that they're just details. But really the problem is going back to captivity in Egypt, and that they don't even want you to live. They've decreed upon you death. We can say, however, that Rashi, through explaining exact language that he uses, gives a deeper understanding how every detail in the pasuk is adding something that in itself is negative. In other words, they're all additional emphases on negativity. And similarly, as the Rebbe already told us, when we're going to look in the wine, Yeino Shel Torah, in the depth, we're going to see that each of those words is adding to the greatness of the bracha that's contained therein when we dive to the depth. Gimel. So we'll understand this according first to understand what's the emphasis of the Torah here. The way that I told you, you're never going to go back. You're going to go back to Egypt. I mean, what's the difference when we're saying this negative consequence, they're going to go back in captivity to Egypt? What's the difference that Hashem has already promised they shouldn't go back there? And Rashi doesn't seemingly address it. Other Mefarshim say that this explains why that the Pasuk says this is the way I told you, you're never going to go back there, explains why it says they're going to go back in ships. Since Hashem says you're never going to see this path again, you're not going to go back in this path, so it can't be that the Jews will come back in this path through dry land. So that's why the Pasuk says Hashem will bring you back in ships. In other words, Hashem says, I'll bring you back in ships in the path that I said you're never going to see again. Because I said you're never going to see this path again, so I'm bringing you back in a different path. I circumvented my own words, so to speak, Hashem says. It's difficult to learn like this in Pshuto Shel Mikra. Because what's the difference when we're talking about, when we're rebuking the Jews and saying, this can happen if you, God forbid, don't listen. What's the difference how Hashem will take you back to Egypt? And the fact that it's, in other words, what's the difference that it's not a contradiction to what Hashem says, I'll never take you back again. Because then also, it shouldn't have said, in the way I told you, you'll never see again. And then you don't have to answer the question. Just say, I'll take you back to Egypt. Don't ask the question. Oh, but you said you're never going to go back in that way. So Hashem says, no, I'll take you back in ships. Don't ask the question. You don't need the answer. Is that why I raise this whole thing? By the way, hang on, because the Rebbe is going to totally revolutionize this actual words in the way that I said you'll never go back. So this doesn't fit at least with Rashi. And especially, the Rebbe says in footnote 16, you read the pasuk, it says, I'll bring you back to Mitzrayim in ships in the way that I said you'll never see again. It sounds like that's a flow from I'll take you back with ships. And he's saying, and I'll take you back to the place where I said you'll never see again. It's not coming. It doesn't sound like the I'll take you back in ships is saying, even though I said you're not going to see that place again. It sounds like it's not an even though. It sounds like I'll take you back in ships to the very place I said you'll never see again. When you read the Pasuk, according to Pshat, those Mefarshim, that Pshat doesn't seem to fit. So we're left with the question, why does Hashem have to bring in this whole concept that I said you'll never go there again, I'll bring you back here now? Dalet, the Chayr we could say, like it says in Medrash Leket Toiv, that the Pasuk wants to emphasize, you know how bad your Avedis are going to be, God forbid? They're going to bring you to violate even worse. Hashem said you should never see Israel, you should never see Mitzrayim again. But you know, if you sin, God forbid, one of the curses is that Hashem is going to cancel out his promise that he's never taking you back to Egypt, he's going to take you back there. That's what it sounds like from this, right? But that's also not understandable in Pshuto Shel Mikra. Okay, so what? To know, in other words, that when you do a sin, it causes you to do other sins, and that even Hashem, in other words, no, sorry, that to do a sin, Hashem will walk back on a promise he's made. You don't need these massive klolas, these massive curses, and the grand finale of the curses tell us this. We learned it many times. We learned it already by Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov says, I'm worried. Why am I worried? Maybe I've sinned. And maybe Hashem has promised to take care of you. Why are you worried? Because maybe I've become dirty. Nislachlachti, b'cheid. Maybe I got dirty with sin. And then what? What's with Hashem's promise? And then maybe I've unearned Hashem's promise. So we know that already from the book of Bereshis. Now, this is the big news here. I'll take you back to Egypt with ships. In the way I told you, you're never going to go back. You see, if you sin, you could even, a promise Hashem said he's not going to take you back, could be reversed. We know that already way before. Also, what's it got to do, Dafka, about going back to Egypt? Well, why, I'm going to take you back to Egypt the way I said you. You're like, what's so relevant here about that detail? Especially in Pshuto Shel Mikra, um, There's another way to look. In other words, it's so bad when you sin that you're even going to do another sin. I said, because one of the ways, the way the Yerushalmi learns this pasuk, in the way I said you should never go back, this is one of the three prohibitions where the Torah says a Jew is not allowed to go back to live in Egypt. So in that case, what are we saying? What's the pasuk saying? Hashem says, I'll take you back. If you sin, I'll take you back to Egypt with ships in a way that I told you I'm never going to take you and you should never go back there. And now you're going to violate another mitzvah. Okay, but in Pshut Shemikah, I mean, come on. You're saying you haven't been doing the mitzvahs, and now you're saying, and because you haven't been doing the mitzvahs, I'm going to take you to violate another mitzvah. Then it quotes in a footnote, like the Arizal asks, what kind of a punishment is this to take them back to Egypt and cause them to violate that prohibition of not going to Egypt? What kind of a punishment is that? Okay. So we don't understand the whole pasuk. In other words, what's this Egypt business where I said you're not going to go back? What does this mean? So says the Rebbe, and hey, so we'll understand this according to deepening our understanding why Rashi says ba'aniyas in ships. He says the word aniyas, Rashi adds b'sfina is b'shivya in ships in captivity. The fact that Jews are going to go back to Egypt in captivity has nothing to do with the word aniyas. So why doesn't he say it on the word v'shivcha? They will take you to Egypt. The word Heshivcha is Shevi. They will take you as captives to Egypt. So why does he wait till the word Onias to say in ships, in as captives? So the Bali Atosfus learn that the word Onias, it adds to the depth of the captivity. Because if it would be by foot, that would mean they're only taking the adults, which are able to travel on foot. But when they say that they're going to go back in ships, so that's where the addition comes, they're going to take everybody, men, women, and children. However, Rashi doesn't, in his commentary, doesn't emphasize that. He doesn't explain that it means women and children as well. He just says, stam, they're going to go back in captivity. So we understand that according to Rashi, the difference between going in ships or going on foot has nothing to do with the universality of who's going. Going back in captivity on foot could also include women and children. But this pasuk, aniyos in ships, is coming to tell you that the entire captivity, that the ship ride will be in a way of captivity. What does that mean? Why? What is Rashi explaining? Vav, the explanation is Rashi is trying to explain that all the details that are enumerated in the pasuk, they're not just details of one general descriptive toichacha, one general descriptive rebuke. I'm going to go back to Egypt. It gives a couple of details. No, those details are also adding in the depth of the rebuke. What? In other words, the details add to the intensity of the suffering. And that's what Rashi learns when the Pasuk goes and enumerates the details. It says, Ba'aniyos, in ships, in the way that I said, you're not going to go back. So there's added emphasis here in the Pasuk about how bad it will be. Besides the mere horribleness of going back to Egypt, even the way there will be in the worst way possible. And in two details. First of all, Ba'aniyas, they're going to go in ships in captivity. In other words, not just will they be captives in Egypt, but the way there will also be as captives in ships. And that's very, very painful and suffering. More, a lot more than traveling by dry land. Because in the ships, they're much more in proximity and therefore under the total control of the captors. As you see, the Rebbe says, Mimizetas Papashas, as you see it simply. The cramped quarters, think back to the pictures we've seen of slave ships, cramped quarters under the deck, totally without an ounce of freedom of space. Which is different when the walking. Square brackets. And that's why, says the Rebbe, we can understand why Rashi doesn't want to learn like the Bali Atosfos, that in this way, by ships, women and children also will go. Because besides the fact that you can take also women and children as captives over dry land, and as it was by going out of Egypt, they all walked. At least slowly, but they walked. But besides that, according to their explanation, it comes out that the actual ships is it doesn't add to the actual suffering. It just adds to the scope. It will take everybody. And therefore, the Pasuk could have just said it much simpler. Hashem will take all of you to Egypt. And the ships doesn't add anything. If you're saying that the ships adds the possibility that everybody will be included in this going back to Egypt, so the Pasuk says, Ve'eshiv Hashem kulchem. Hashem will take everybody back. Ve'eshiv Hashem kulchem. Okay, that was just so the first thing that Rebbe pointed out is that going back in a ship adds to the depravity, to the suffering. And then, and Rebbe says in Ha'orah 23 that this will also explain how Pipshut Shemikra, why Rashi explained what that Aniyos is ships, because Aniyos could technically also mean the word Ta'aniyah Va'aniyah, which means suffering. And it could be going on dry land. Hashem will take you back to Mitzrayim, but Aniyos in a suffering way. All of you, like in a tragically, we've heard about the death marches in the Second World War and so on. However, and therefore, because I mean, God, in Pshuta Shemikra, what's the difference? What's the detail of the ship going to add? So one may read the pasuk, if one didn't have Rashi, one may read the pasuk that it's ta'aniya v'aniya, like his expression of tzar v'yilal, of pain and moaning, crying out, right? So that's why Rashi has to come and explain, no, aniyas here means ships. Why ships? Because ships, they're going in captivity in ships. That's a much harsher form of being taken down in captivity. So understand how the Rebbe here is saying, why is the word being explained on the word onias? If Rashi is trying to say captivity, why doesn't he say it on the word veheshivcha, taking him down as captives? So the Rebbe says, because the word onias requires explanation. Because why would ships be a necessary detail here? And therefore you could say onias means in suffering, ta'aniya v'aniya. Ah, so Rashi says, no, onias means their ships. But why ships? Because the captivity is being in ships, and as Rebbe points out, that's a much harsher form of being taken into captivity. And then there's a second point, and here the Rebbe revolutionizes the way that it says, in that very way that I said, you're never going to see it again, I'm taking you back on that way. In the same way you came before. Through that desert, that ferocious desert. It says about the desert, Hanoira, Midbar, Agodel, Va'anoira, the great and awesome desert, Nachash, Sarav, Akrav, with snakes and serpents and scorpions, with Tzimoin, Hashemayim, and thirst, there's no water there. As we know from the great miracles Hashem made them in the desert, how disastrous it would be without that protective, miraculous shield. And that's why Hashem said, because of the disaster, because of the danger that way, Hashem said, I'm never taking you back there. Now Hashem said, I'm taking you back there. And as we understand, says the Rebbe, that when Hashem says, I'm never going to take you back, I'm taking you back that way. There were two parts to that way when the Jews left Egypt, right? There was a sea part, they walked through the sea, and there was a dry part, there was the desert. I'm going to have to back that same. And it took back partly in divinity, ships, terrible divinity, and take you back to that very road desert that you didn't like. That I said, I'm never going to take you back to that desert. And Rashi doesn't have to explain square brackets here. Rashi doesn't have to explain that baderech, in the way that I said, right, the other mefarshim all said, I'm taking you back to Egypt in ships, and they, in that place, so to speak, I said, you're never going back there. Didn't differentiate. Once again, it's by ship. Here at sea, they went by dry land. And one of the mefarshim would say, that I'm actually saying, in the way that I said, you're never back, and take a different way. No, the episode is a pashto. In that way, you were afraid of, that you beat up, because you were the foul, as you acted by miracles. That way, I'm taking you back again, without the miracles this time. Square brackets, Rashi doesn't have to explain what this means, but finish. Just he doesn't explain why it's such a big it's a disaster back in Egypt. Hashem said, if you just take back to Egypt, that's right, we know Egypt. Egypt is him. Egypt is, we escaped Egypt. Rashi doesn't have to explain the great punishment of Egypt. Rashi also doesn't have to explain the great punishment of going back in ferocious way in that desert. Because Rashi doesn't explain in the beginning of the Teicha. You can't make people scared, only to make them scared, it's not scared of. Just the same way that the people go back to Egypt is scared. If you don't listen, go back to Egypt. Oh, no, I don't want. Similarly, the way you're going to go back, I'll take you back in that same way. Which way? The desert way. Zayin. According to this, we'll also understand the Hemshech, what Rashi says, the continuation, and you'll want to sell yourself to your enemies. That's the way Rashi says, v'smakartem, not that you, that your enemies will sell you. You will try to sell yourself to your enemies. What does that mean? Why? How does that add in the depravity of the situation? I mean, he just said you're going to go down in captivity. In other words, you're not selling yourself. Others have taken you captive. What does it mean now to add to the sorrow? You're going to try and sell yourself. Also, why does the pasuk say that? Since there's no one to buy. And what does it say? There's no one to buy. Because, as Rashi points out, because they will have decreed upon you death and destruction and extermination. So what's the difference that there's no buyer? So the Rebbe explains now. Since every detail in this Teichacha is adding to the depth of the suffering, it's its own concept. So Rashi learns, this pasuk is not talking about the fact that the Jews will be sold through their captivity. That's it. That would just be an additional detail. They're captives and their captors will sell them. No, he's going to say that the depth of the suffering of their captivity is going to be so bad till you're going to want to escape this captivity, which is horrible, by selling yourself. You're going to desire and look for ways to sell yourself to be made servants and servants. You're going to ask your captors, please sell me to some guy in Egypt. That's how bad being held captive is. You're going to search to become slaves, to be sold into slavery. And to who? To your enemies. Even being a slave by the enemies is better than being captives, held captives by these horrible captors. That's why, just for the sake of maybe making this, again, if the mashal is not good, don't take it. The horribleness of the concentration camps was that people would beg and try and find ways to be put into slave labor in, let's say, a factory, a work quarry, or whatever it is. That's how, in other words, this is an additional detail, says the Rebbe, in the captivity, in the horribleness of the way they're being treated as captives, that they're even looking to be sold as slaves to their enemy. Which is, we actually saw that happen in the horrible suffering in the concentration camps, Rahman al-Islam. Through this comes a, again, that's just my own addition. Sorry, I was just, shouldn't add when teaching a sikha perhaps, but it maybe gives a little bit of perspective of being able to understand that what the Rebbe is saying here, that this is a detail in the depth of the captivity. Otherwise, they're already slaves, they're already captives. What's the difference that they want to sell themselves to their enemies? No, pshat is that's how bad their conditions are. They're going down in ships, which is horrible. And they're getting down to Egypt, and they're going to go back in that ferocious way where they're terrified of that horrible desert. And it's going to be so bad that even as captives, they're going to look to be slaves to their enemies. This will also understand why Rashi adds, there's no one who's going to buy. You know why? Because it's been decreed upon you death and extermination. According to this, we could say the Ve'en Kaina, really the fact that there's no one to buy is a continuation of the previous Teichacha. It says, again, you want to sell yourself because it's so horrible to be held captive by these captors. You don't want to sell yourself to your enemies and nobody buys. And therefore you're going to stay in your previous situation by those captors. Rashi says, no. This is going deeper into the disaster. Not that nobody's going to want to buy you. You're going to stay in your status quo, being held by the captors. No, additional problem. Nobody's going to want to buy you, and that's why your captors are going to just say, nobody even wants you. Death and extermination, God forbid. The absolute end of game. And that's why, says the Rebbe, this is the grand finale, horrible grand finale, of the whole Teichacha. Captives, in a horrible way. It would be even be better to be slaves to enemies, but nobody even wants to buy. And which leads to the captor saying, forget about it. Death and extermination. Rachman al-Islam. End of story. And then, Eile Divrei HaBris, The Torah continues, this is the covenant. So guys, listen up. Do the mitzvahs. Don't go in the negativity, because there's this whole 98 curses that we've just said. If God forbid, we go in the not right way. Okay, that's pshat. Again, in the pshat, Rashi is the pshat of these psukim is, we're painting in vivid picture, in vivid colors, the disaster of not listening. And so Rashi helps us make those pictures even more vivid and even more descriptive by all the little details he adds. Ches, now, the Rebbe promised us already that whatever he's going to tell us about Rashi adding vivid colors to the negativity, oh, we're going to turn it around, and all of these are going to be beautiful things. How? So as we said before, no, it's Ches. We said before that Rashi hints in the Yenushal Torah, in the wine of Torah, in the depth of Torah, how the words of the rebuke are in their essence, in their depth, the highest things. The kavana, the intention of the teichecha, is what? What's the purpose of Hashem telling us these things? God forbid. It's not in order to be, you know, chas v'shalom. Hashem wants to bring us to tshuva. As the pasuk continues in the next parsha, it's of him. That when all these things will come upon you, the blessing and the not blessing, and then you'll take to heart and you'll come back to Hashem. The whole purpose is to bring us back to Hashem. God forbids, no vindictiveness, chas v'shalom. You could say that's why in the end of the teichacha, there's a pasuk that gives us in the inner reading the whole purpose of the teichacha and the great virtue, the great advantage that becomes through tshuva. What's the advantage of tshuva? The Gemara says tshuva is great because the sins, doinos, the sins that were done on purpose become like zochis, become like mitzvahs, become like merits. He has a special kind of merits. You can't get this as a tzaddik. A tzaddik can only, the only zechuyus he has by doing mitzvahs. He doesn't have the transformative merit of taking negativity and making them, what's the greatness of it? The pnimius of this is that the sparks of kedusha that have fallen down so far that they're no longer mundane. You have stuff that's mundane. A loaf of bread, the sparks of kedusha that's mundane. You can take it, get energy, and learn Torah, elevate it. You could take it, God forbid, and get energy and go rob a bank. Lowered it, right? Take it into klippa. There are some things, there are some sparks that have fallen into the three klippas. A piece of Jews don't even call pig by the name. Dover Acher, something else. A piece of pig. There's nothing a Jew can do with that. It's tummy. But when somebody who's eaten that and then does tshuva, it's changed into merit. A tzaddik can only refine the sparks that are in the mundane things, in the permissible things. They're from the klipa that's called klipas nega, the negativity that has light in it as well, right? Whereas those sparks that have fallen into the three klipas atmeyas, the three totally tamei, klippas, right? There's four levels of klippas, three unredeemable ones, and the fourth, that's the playing field of mundane and, average things. They can be elevated or not elevated. There's light in that klippa. That's most of the things of this world, right? That we can engage in and elevate. However, those nitzaitzes, those sparks that have fallen down into the three tamei klippas, they're so low that you can't elevate them regularly. But what does that tell you? That tells you that their high, that their source in kedusha is very high, because we know that the rule is the higher something is, the lower it can fall. So therefore, that tells us that the source of these sparks that have fallen into the three shalish klippas atmeyas, the three tamei klippas, are higher than the source of the sparks that's in the fourth klippa that's called klippas nega, the klippa that has light. As, right? And therefore, when you refine and elevate those nitzaitzes, those sparks that have fallen into the shalosh klippas atmeyas, you draw down a much higher light. And that's, right, so that's why Baal Tshuva, he has made a mistake and engaged in something that is in total negativity. that's sourced even higher than the regular things that can be elevated, now when he turns himself around, he undoes the damage, but not just undoes the damage, but he takes this energy that has been klippa, for example, and now that leads him to get closer to Hashem, so he transforms it and draws down the highest source of that spark that had fallen into the impossible place of Kshal Shkrib Satmais. Can't do this consciously, Chas V'Shalom. And this is it says if you engage in Aveiras in order to elevate the Aveira, then you're just going to get stuck there. Hashem doesn't let you do that. Anyway, it's just a parenthetical note. And this is the Pirush HaPnimi, the inner reading of what it says in the Pasuk. Heshivcha Hashem, Hashem will take you to Mitzrayim. Why is Hashem taking Mitzrayim? The word Heshivcha. Heshivcha is tshuva. Hashem is going to bring you back to the great advantage, the great virtue of tshuva. How do we see the greatness of tshuva? There's two parts of this pasuk. You'll be sold to your enemies as service and maidservants. What's eivecha? In other words, there's two words there. Sham leivecha, there to your enemies. The word there, what's there? Kedusha is here. Hashem is a real presence. The presence of anti-kedusha is really, it's not a real presence. Something Hashem creates as a diversion for the struggle. We call it Shom. It's there. It's not real reality. And our enemies, Eivecha, our enemies is the things that are enemies to Kedusha. So Shom and Eivecha, right? That's going to be Heshivcha. It's going to be Teshuva from the things that have fallen to Shom, place of Klippas, and Eivecha, in enemy territory. They're going to be Heshivcha, they're going to be brought back, they're going to be elevated through tshuva. And what's going to happen through that? Ein koine, there won't be anybody to purchase. Here the Rebbe says, the word ein can also be read ayin. You know, it says, ein mazel Yisrael, the Jews don't have mazel. They're higher than mazel. But this can also be read ayin mazel Yisrael. That the mazel of Yisrael, you know where the fortune of the Jews come from. Not from the usual mazel, the constellations. Ayin, from a place that's way higher, that's where they're taking it from. So ayin, from the place of ayin, a place that is high, way higher, we call it nothing, because it's so high you can't define it. From that you get to koine. Ayin, koine, it's ayin, it's higher than the level that's called koine. What's koine means to buy. What is koine in the spiritual worlds? The world of Atzilus. Why is the world of Atzilus called koine? Because when you buy something, nothing's transformed. I had an item that was by the seller, and now it's by the buyer. The world of Atzilus is, by definition, not yet a creation, a new thing, so to speak, that Hashem has had to transform his higher level of Elikus to something of a different nature, which is already the world of Bria. When we talk about Kinyan is that Hashem has, so to speak, the level prior to Atzilus has moved over, obviously in some form of Ishtalshlus, but it still is not changed. It's still very similar to the level that was before. But so Atzilus is the highest level of the four worlds. Ayin Koine, when you do the work of Teshuva and taking the Nitzoses, taking the sparks from Shom, from a place of Klippas, from a vech of your enemies, you get to Ayin, Koine, to the higher level than Koine, higher level of Atzilus, to Ayin, the level higher than Atzilus, through tshuva. Unbelievable. Tess. And then, so that's in the simple reading of the Pasuk, we can learn this beautiful the purpose for the whole thing is to bring you back in tshuva, and the Pasuk gives you some clear definitions. But Rashi adds detail. So Rashi, when we read it in the Yein HaShoter, in the depth and the wine of Rashi, we see that Rashi adds more detail, more vivid color to it. Since the Yidden are a portion of Hashem, so you can't say that, as we've described, the whole achievement, the whole purpose is that those sparks that fell so low into the enemy territory, we send the Jews in there and they elevate them, they pluck them out. So one second. You're telling the soldier, the Jew, to go in there for those sparks? That's The Jew is a chelik elakama mal mamish. He's not there to on behalf of something else. Ah, so we have to say that this is really not to benefit the sparks, so to speak, to benefit the levels of elikus that fell down. This is to benefit the Jew himself. The Rebbe quotes there in the Ha'ara, in footnote 39. Tani says, he does say that the purpose of the neshama going down below is in order to fix the goof, the body, and the nefesh habamis, and all the sparks in the world. So it sounds like the mission is go in there in enemy territory and pluck out the sparks. He says, however, the Alter Rebbe look in Likutei Torah, Rebbe quotes a few maimonim, then he says in Likutei Torah in Parshas Balak, paraphrases, but the achatiritzo amiti, the real reason for the neshama going down below, is because the neshama becomes baal teshuva. The neshama becomes somebody who has the virtue of tshuva. Before that, the neshama is like a tzaddik, comes from a place of holiness. We send him down behind enemy lines, and then it's not just redeeming the sparks. The neshama becomes elevated. Because we know that the tshuva does an elevation, not just in those sparks that he's elevating, but in the persona of the person elevating. So to speak, their soldier becomes wow. That becomes something special for the actual doer. And that's how Rashi is going to explain when he gives the details of this pasuk, explaining this pasuk. It says, you're going to be sold there as slaves and servants. Rashi says, not you're going to be sold by the captors. You're going to want to be sold. You're going to ask to be sold. Not that it's coming by the captors, but you're asking for it. This tells us about teshuva. The specialty of teshuva is that a person becomes a servant to Hashem. The word eved, in a positive way, is you become a servant to Hashem. And in what way do you become a servant? By doing tshuva, in what way do you become a servant to Hashem? Atem v'vakshi, you're asking to become the servant. It's something that you're self-initiating. It's not like the aved of bonim. Tzaddikim are like goody-goody sons, always doing the right thing. Why are they doing it? That's their nature. They're sons to great father. And naturally, they're goody-goodies. They want to do the right thing. That's a tzaddik. The greatness of Hashem's presence is so great, he wants to do the right thing. So it's not really something that's self-motivated. It's really coming because of the inspiration from above. However, Baal Tshuva, I mean, he threw that all off, right? He didn't care about God. He was far from Hashem. Now, when I say, well, Hashem wants you to come back, He's already said in every which way, he doesn't care about that. Now when he comes back, why is he coming back? It's not because he feels excited about doing Hashem's work. No, he rejected that. He's into the negativity now. That's become his new nature. So tshuva really emphasizes that a person has from somehow within himself motivated, self-motivated and changed. And the desire to be a slave to Hashem is coming from within himself, like the pasuk, like Rashi explains this pasuk. You're going to want to be slaves, sold as slaves to Hashem. That's tshuva. And that's the main way of serving Hashem, like a servant, where it's not coming because the master is forcing you to do the work. You weren't connected to this master. You already ran away. But because you want to become a servant to this master by accepting the yoke of heaven. Yeah. And because we want to always emphasize the greatness of the positivity within the Teichacha, the Rebbe here in Ha'ara 44 brings that there's a different tight. She says, you're going to want to sell yourself to your enemy. How does that fit? You want to sell yourself to Hashem, to be a servant to Hashem. The word Ivecha, your enemy, the Tzemach Tzedek has explained. The Rebbe says, Al Derech, it could be similar. So the Tzemach Tzedek explained on Eicha, when it says Ivecha, the word Ivecha could also mean something positive. You become like an enemy. What is an enemy? An enemy is something that's antithetical to you. You hate something that's totally different than you. Through doing tshuva, you can become like an enemy compared to your previous level. You can become so changed that allegorically, it's like an enemy compared to the previous stage. In other words, the tshuva changes you so much. The word aivecha can also be used in a positive spin here. Yud. Similarly, Rashi says there'll be no purchaser. What did Rashi say there'll be no purchaser? We said Rashi explained the depth of the problem. Because there'll be no purchaser, they will decree upon you death and destruction. This, when we flip to the positive, this adds a deeper dimension in the greatness of what's achieved through tshuva. What does it mean deep down? What does it mean deep down? Headache, vikiloyin, death and destruction. It can also mean something positive. It means that even being alive here in this physical world, the feeling that the person has, the frame of mind the person is one of death. Death about what? About his materialistic desires and his previous not positive past. In other words, the framing of his being, a reframing of his being in this world to a place where he's not really in this physical world. And headache, those things are like dead for him. And also, kiloyin, kiloyin means to be finished off. Kiloyin can also mean to be totally consumed with his soul is consumed to be totally incorporated within Hashem, to be non-existent in a transparent way of being incorporated within Hashem. Klois ha-nefesh, total consummation of the soul, telikus. In other words, even while he's here, he's like hereg and kiloyin. He's like the same level that usually the neshama only achieves when it goes out of the body. Like Rebbe in square brackets, he says, like we say the Pirush and Chassidus, you know, the Mishnah builds up from the age of 5 to learn Chumash, 10 then, at 30 there's strength, at 40 there's wisdom, at 70 is old age, as if somebody's really strong, at 80, and then it says at 90 to walk bent over, and at 100, it's as if he died and left the world. A guy made it to 100, you tell him, you're as if you're dead. What is a pshat? So Chassidus explains, when a Jew, this is all levels, when a Jew reaches the highest level of reaching the level of 100 years, in other words, he has 100 different levels that he's climbed up the ladder. Because 100 is 10 times 10. So he refined all his 10 powers and faculties of the soul. You know what happens then? It's as if he's dead. In other words, what does dead mean? That means as if he's finished his battle with this world. And even while he's here below, he can see Elikus. Because it says, what does it say? Nobody can see Hashem and live. What does the Medrash say about that? That while you're alive, you can't see Hashem. When somebody passes on, they could. The neshama can see Hashem. So when you say that the person is as if he passed away from this world, it means that he's already at a higher level than this world while he's in this world. And that's what we're saying here. That hereg b'kiloyin, the blessing of tshuva is that a person can reach the level where he's as if finished with this world, while he's in this world, and have all the benefits of seeing godliness in this world. It's the absolute pinnacle. That's why it's the grand finale. Yudav. The truth is that not just is the, now the Rebbe is giving us, wow, a concept that's transformational, totally. The truth is, not just does the rebuke itself, not just is this whole thing for the purpose of tshuva, but even what led us to sinning, which led to the telaf, to the teichacha, that was also for tshuva. The mistake itself was because of tshuva. In other words, even though in a revealed way, why did we get all these rebukes? Because of sins. In a revealed way, sins are done because of free choice. But bipnimius, that also comes from above. In a deeper track, that also comes from above. Hashem brings people to the place where they err in order they should come to the advantage of tshuva. Very important here, this is a concept spoken about in Chassidus, based on the Medrash, whatever, there is a footnote here to the sources, but it's We've spoken about it before, and we talked about the journeys in Chelek Yud Ches Nekut Sichas. And this is hinted at also in the beginning of the pasuk. It says, "Veshivcha Hashem, Hashem will take you back in the way I said you shouldn't go there." In other words, even when the Jews are going into the way that Hashem says, don't go there, it's a forbidden way, that's also Hashem taking them back. Because what's the purpose of it? In order to bring the person to tshuva. The person should fall into that place and then work his way out and have the great advantage that tshuva brings with it. And that's also why Rashi adds, Ba'aniyas in ships, he says, in captivity, that also the descent of the Yidden in Egypt to the sense and the concealment of the world, it's not by the Jews' desire. It's also b'shivya. It's also a form of captivity. Hashem's taking him there against his will. Why? To bring him to tshuva. Yud Beis, according to all this, we'll understand why Rashi explains also that it's with ships. It's not just explaining the word aniyas. Rashi adds to the word aniyas and he uses a different word. What's the different word? Aniyas, the word aniyas is ships, right? So what does a ship do? It protects a person when he got to go through the difficult waters. So he can't go put his body into the water. The ship gives him safe passage. Similarly, in Ruchnias, when a Shama comes down below, so it goes into the ferocious and turbulent waters of this world, needs some protection. Shouldn't get sunk, God forbid. Need a ship. And that's Sfinis. What's the Sfinis? Sfinis, as is explained in numerous places, is Teira Mitzvahs. You go, you put yourself in the ship, as the Baal Shem Tov explains, on the word Yodei Hayom Ba'aniyos, we say every Erev Shabbos, we thank Hashem. That verse that thanks Hashem, that refers to the four kinds of people that have to thank Hashem. One of them is those that go through a ship, go through a sea, travel through a sea. Hashem says that Yodei Hayom Ba'aniyos, what gives us the power to go through the sea, the turbulent waters, is Aniyos, and that refers to the work that we do in Kedusha. But here, there's two levels, says the Rebbe. There's Aniyos in Lashon Kodesh. It's a Hebrew word, ships in Hebrew. In other words, that would refer to the protectiveness of Torah mitzvahs of Kedusha. And then there's the word Rashi uses, which is Sfinais. That's the translation into Targum, into the language, which at that time was Aramaic, the language of the was used more in the world. In other words, in the world of translation of Targum, which is already belongs to the 70 nations, and we have to, so the Neshama is descending into that depth to transform it. So the avoda there is sfinais. In other words, it's going, the journey is into a place of targum, into a place of concealment, which needs to be transformed. As we said before, that the real tshuva is that the negativity, this dinais, become zochias, become merits. So says Rashi, since we're trying to fix something here, a place that Hashem says you're not going to see it again. So you know what you need to do? You need the ships itself are not enough in Hebrew. You need sfinais. You need to, because we're trying to fix the depth and the descent of the chatoim. So we need such an aveda that's protecting us, sfinais, even in the world, the turbulent world, not of Kedusha, but of negativity. I'm not so 100% sure about this last thing I just said. The last little keta. Yud Gimel. He also made will Hashem that through the learning of Yena Shel Torah, the wine of Torah, and the inner aspect of Torah, from the very words of rebuke, so soon it should be Nizgal, it should be revealed, the pnimiest good of all the words of rebuke, in a revealed way, in a visible way, everybody should have be able to see with their eyes of flesh the revealed, visible good in children. The blessing is the classic blessing, Bane Chaya Mezeina, children and everything that we need related to children, and Nachas, of course. Chaye, life, health. Mezeina, food, which literally means parnasa, a good livelihood. Revichian, in a way of abundance. And all these techachas, all these rebukes should come. You know where they should come, on the negativity, on the enemies, on the negativity. As we said earlier, we spoke about that we could say that all these negativities is going on the bad guys. And every Yid, as amongst the totality, Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, will become inscribed, written and inscribed in Eksiva, Vachasim HaToiva, Shana Teva, Mesukah, sweet year. In a visible way, emphasize, the Rebbe emphasizes it, Teva, Hanira, Vanigla, in a good that's visible and obvious, not hidden in these shrouded ways. Till the main bracha, the general bracha, the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, speedily in our days.